All right. Hello, everyone. And I just want to encourage you to come to that satsang that Ken just mentioned with Floyd Henderson. Floyd's pretty cool. He was a student of Nisargadatta Maharaj, which I'm about to share from. So if you get a chance to come on that third Sunday of this month at 8 p.m. or at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time and listen to Floyd, I really encourage it. Now for Floyd's teacher, Nisargadatta Maharaj. I am going to begin with message 8 in the book I Am That. And I'll just begin reading and we'll see what kind of a trip Nisargadatta takes us on tonight. Questioner. As a child, fairly often I experienced states of complete happiness, verging on ecstasy. Later, they ceased. But since I came to India, they reappeared, particularly after I met you. Yet these states, however wonderful, are not lasting. They come and go, and there is no knowing when they will come back. Nisargadatta, how can anything be steady in a mind which itself is not steady? Questioner, how can I make my mind steady? Nisargadatta, how can an unsteady mind make itself steady? Of course, it cannot. It is the nature of the mind to roam about. All you can do is to shift the focus of consciousness beyond the mind. Questioner, how is it done? Nisargadatta, refuse all thoughts except one, the thought I am. The mind will rebel in the beginning, but with patience and perseverance, it will yield and keep quiet. Once you are quiet, things will begin to happen spontaneously and quite naturally without any interference on your part. So I'm pretty sure that what I'm reading is easy to understand. But just for the sake of letting it soak in, just for the sake of marinating in it, I'll just go ahead and repeat what I'm hearing. So again, there's a man that has told Nisargadatta that when he was a child, he used to have these experiences of ecstasy, and that they did disappear, but since he's been in India, especially since he's been around Nisargadatta, these experiences have returned, but they don't last. And Nisargadatta is saying that these experiences are really experiences of the mind, and that any experience of the mind is going to be temporary. And so what he is doing is he is pointing the questioner towards reality. He's pointing him towards the I am presence. But what's interesting about this particular pointer is that he actually mentioned the thought I am. Uh-oh. I just got a text from my boyfriend. We're supposed to go on family vacation. He says I may have an issue with vacation next week, so I'll deal with that later. It won't be the first time His job has a way of interfering with vacations and we have to cancel them. So we'll see what happens. But what's interesting about this particular pointer again is that Nisargadatta is saying, refuse all thoughts except one, the thought I am. And those of us who have been practicing awareness, watching awareness meditation, really what we are doing when we practice awareness, watching awareness meditation is we are attempting to locate, isn't exactly the right word, but we're attempting to locate the I am presence, which is beyond the ego, beyond thought. And we're attempting to place our attention on the I am presence and stay with that. The I am presence, awareness, consciousness could all be seen as synonymous for us right now. But he's not really directing this person to focus on the I am presence. He's directing this person to focus on the thought I am. So there's a Hindu teaching. It's really an example. I learned it from Ramana Maharshi, but I've since learned that other teachers have used it too, even prior to Ramana Maharshi. So it's kind of a typical Hindu teaching. And the teaching is that it takes a thorn to remove a thorn. You know, like if you step on a thorn, and of course, I guess this would have been before the time of needles. The saying is probably, you know, my mom used to always get a needle to get a thorn out of my foot, right? Or a splinter out of my foot. But this saying has probably been around since before needles. So it's the same idea that if you step on a thorn and you get, you know, or you get a splinter in your foot, you need a thorn to take it out. But once you dig it back out of your foot with the other thorn, you know, you throw both thorns away. So it takes a thorn to remove a thorn. Well, what that really comes down to is it takes a thought to remove to remove thoughts, or it takes a thought to remove the mind. And Ramana Maharshi, the thought that he taught to remove the mind was, who am I? Now you continually ask, who am I? But you don't just ask it. You ask it and you look with your looking attention to attempt to locate, discover the answer, the real answer to that question, who am I? And you continue to ask that until you discover the true self. And then at that point, you throw away the question, who am I? You no longer need it. You throw away the thorn. Where here, Nisargadatta is recommending a thorn, the thought I am. And I don't know if he will further explain how to use that thought or not. I guess we'll find out as we read forward. This is the first time I've come across this recommendation. I've always seen, or at least perceived, Nisargadatta as recommending that we focus on the I am presence itself, not that we use the thought I am, but that we focus on the I am presence itself. So when I ask myself, you know, how would I use the thought I am? The answer that comes to me is that whenever the mind begins thinking about me in any way, whether it's thinking about me positively, thinking about me negatively, thinking about me in the past, thinking about me in the future, you know, what it's really doing, of course, is it's defining me as the body, personality, mind, right? So whenever I notice that the mind is thinking about me, I just say to myself, I am. I am being an affirmation of truth. But even more than that, it's a reminder that I am not whatever the mind is saying right now. I'm not the one who should have said this in that conversation, or I'm not the one who's maybe going to have this problem in the future, or whatever the mind is saying. I'm not that. I'm just, I am. I am, I can see as I'm looking at this, can bring me back from the past or back from the future to the presence, because I am is really a presence statement. And in fact, I'm pretty sure that if somebody really did practice the thought, I am, consistently, regularly, they would begin to accidentally discover the I am presence. Because it's all of that thinking about, who the ego says I am, it's all of that thinking that covers up the I am presence. So if I kind of cut the thinking short every time I see it by saying I am, at some point I'm going to notice myself. And in fact, that's not much different at all. In fact, maybe it's not different at all from what Inner Ramana gave me. When I received the teachings of Inner Ramana, I was given the mantra, I am that I am. And I was told to say that mantra to myself every time the thought came to the mind to say the mantra. And of course, it most frequently, probably 98% of the time, when the mantra came to say the mantra, it arrived because I was lost in thought. And I'd be lost in thought, thinking about whatever, and then this thought would come into the mind to say the mantra. And I would pause. I would remember my desire to know my truth. Then I would slowly say to myself, I am that I am. And then I would linger in the silence. And initially, I practiced this mantra for a couple of months before one day I spontaneously became aware of myself as I didn't know the words I am presence then. What I called myself was the something real. Because, in A Course in Miracles, it says, nothing real can be threatened, nothing unreal exists. Well, I discovered the I am presence through saying the mantra, I am that I am, but I had not yet heard the words I am presence. I hadn't heard those words yet, but I had heard that introduction to A Course in Miracles. And so the way I described what I discovered was, I discovered that I am that something real. That something real that cannot be threatened. That's what I am. So I discovered it through a very similar thought. Instead of the thought I am, it was the thought I am that I am. So again, the thorn that removes the thorn. So let's go back and see what happens next. Again, Nisargadatta says, refuse all thoughts except one, the thought I am. The mind will rebel in the beginning, but with patience and perseverance, it will yield and keep quiet. Once you are quiet, things will begin to happen spontaneously and quite naturally, without any interference on your part. That's exciting, isn't it? That once you really discover that I am presence, once the mind is quiet enough that you discover the I am presence, then as you become more and more aware of that I am presence, right, things will begin to happen spontaneously and quite naturally without any interference on your part. It's kind of like the awakening snowball is going to begin to roll downhill. Right, you had to push the snowball uphill for a time, but now you kind of round the top of the hill And that awakening snowball begins to roll downhill. Once you are quiet, things will begin to happen spontaneously and quite naturally without any interference on your part. So the questioner says, can I avoid this protracted battle with my mind? Nisargadatta says, yes, you can. Just live your life as it comes, but alertly, watchfully, allowing everything to happen as it happens, doing the natural things the natural way, suffering, rejoicing as life brings. This also is a way. So we call this the loving all method. Those of you who are in, oh, that's my daddy calling now. Gosh, everybody's trying to contact me tonight while I'm teaching. I'll have to call him later too. We call that the loving all method. Wait, there's my dad leaving a message. Can you hear my daddy's voice? Oh, you can't hear him. Yeah, I have the message machine turned off in this room, so it's not so loud. Oh, okay. All right. So I'll call daddy later. So let me get back to where I was. Let me just read this again from Nisargadatta. Just live your life as it comes, but alertfully, watchfully, allowing everything to happen as it happens, doing the natural things the natural way, suffering, rejoicing as life brings. This also is a way. So I was saying we call this the loving all method, those of us who are in the gentle healing group. And when we learned about the loving all method, we learned that the goal is to love everything. And in fact, the instructions are very clear that if a thought comes into the mind, it might be a thought that we perceive as a bad thought, you know, like, you know, maybe I had a thought that I don't know. Well, like my boyfriend texted me a moment ago commenting, he says, I may have an issue with vacation next week. So maybe I have a thought like, gosh, I hate him. He's always doing this, right? I judge that as a bad thought. But the idea of the loving all method is you love every thought exactly as it is. So if I have this thought, gosh, I hate him, he always does this, then I just love the experience of having that thought and that emotion. Right? You just love the experience of having that thought and that emotion. And then of course it moves on, you know, then it leaves, you know, because thoughts come and go. And if I'm just loving the experience of having that thought and that emotion, I'm really not going to cling to them and they will move on freely. But the loving all method does say that if there's something that you feel you can't love, then you can accept it. So if I have the thought, gosh, you know, I hate him, he always does this, and I feel like I can't love that thought, I can accept that that thought appeared in my mind. Right? I can accept that that was the conditioning, you know, and that that thought appeared in the mind. And the loving all method says, if you can't accept it, then you can emotionally allow it. And emotionally allow is really the same as rest, accept, and trust. So now I had this thought, you know, that, gosh, I hate him. He always does this to us. I'm angry. But now I also feel guilty for having the thought. So I emotionally allow the anger and I emotionally allow the guilt. I practice rest, accept, and trust. So that's the loving all method. And in effect, that's what Nisargadatta is talking about here. He is saying, Just live your life as it comes, but alertly, watchfully. In other words, don't be unconscious, right? Be alert, be watchful. Allow everything to happen as it happens. Don't try to control or manipulate things. Do the natural things the natural way. So whatever your job is, whatever whatever you do with your family, just live life the natural way. Suffering, rejoicing as life brings. This also is a way, right? So, just be with everything, but you want to be with everything in that vein of acceptance or that vein of loving all, not resisting. I have been spending some time with Bentinho Massaro lately. He knows that I had interest in a retreat he did called the Sedona Experiment. And so he gave me access to videos from that retreat. And so I've been spending, it has like 20 different sessions. So I've been spending a lot of time watching these videos. And, one thing Bentinho says a lot in those videos is that for most people, life is arguing with God. That's the way he words it. Life is arguing with God. And what that really means is it's resisting everything that happens. Like, we might have to cancel our vacation next week. I can't believe he's doing this to it again, right? That's arguing with God. Because if something happens in Ron's job where he can't go on vacation and we have to cancel, that's just what is, right? It's just what is. Why argue with God? God is what is in this case. So what Nisargadatta is recommending here is a life that is not arguing with God. A life that is seeing everything that happens as it happens and just flowing with it and being with it. Right? So the questioner, after getting that answer from Nisargadatta, and again, remember the question. Let me go back to what the question was that led to that answer, because I think that's important too. The question was, can I avoid this protracted battle with my mind? That was the question. And Nisargadatta recommended this just living life as it comes as the answer to that question. Right? And if you really think about the way Bentinho words that about arguing with God, it's almost as if the questioner, the protracted battle with my mind, that's the arguing with God, arguing with everything, right? So it's almost as if the questioner said, can I live life without arguing with God? And Nisargadatta's like, sure you can, just live it as it comes, right? Be with it as it is. So next, the questioner says, well, he says, well, then I can as well marry, have children, run a business, be happy. Nisargadatta says, sure, you may or may not be happy. Take it in your stride. Now, that's an interesting answer. You may or may not be happy. Take it in your stride. And the reason that's an important answer is because let's assume that without knowing it, I was really looking forward to this vacation. Like maybe that I had a little thought in the mind that I've been too busy lately, and I'll tell you what we were going to do, or maybe what we're still going to do. He hasn't canceled yet, right? So I'll tell you what the plans were. We have a log cabin up in the mountains, up in Estes Park. And Jasmine and Ron and I were going to go spend about 5 days alone in a log cabin. And I've never done that before in my entire life. Just kind of went and hung out in the winter time, in the mountains, with a fireplace, and just kind of it was going to be kind of a nothing week. We were going to bring books, that kind of thing. So So let's assume that I was really, really looking forward to this, but I didn't really notice that there was this thought in my mind that I'd been too busy and I just needed this 5 days of doing nothing, right? Didn't really notice it until he says vacation is canceled. And then I get really disappointed. I mean, like, I really wanted to do this, right? Okay, so I'm not happy. Would you agree in this moment? Gosh, I really wanted to do this. I'm not happy. What he's saying is take my unhappiness in stride. Be with that. Be with the unhappiness. Just because otherwise I'm going to start arguing with God again. The unhappiness happened. So be with the unhappiness. A few years ago, I don't know how many years ago, maybe even as many as 5 years ago, I was reading The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, and chapter 15 in The Untethered Soul recommends happiness as a path to awakening. It's very, very similar to the Loving All method, and very, very similar to what Nisargadatta is teaching here, right? Just taught a slightly different way by a different teacher. And after I read that chapter on happiness as a spiritual path, it made sense to me, and I felt like I was ready for that. So I took a vow of happiness, a vow of happiness, like some people take a vow of poverty. And what was so funny is at that time, Jasmine and Danielle and I were the ones living in this house. And Jasmine and Danielle and I always got along so well. I mean, we never had any conflict in our house. It was just a, fabulous relationship between the three of us. But within a day or so after taking the vow of happiness, a conflict arose. And Danielle got very, very upset at me. She ran out of the house and slammed the door. I wasn't laughing then, though. Jasmine got mad at me for making Danielle mad, because remember, this doesn't happen. So Danielle, Jasmine ran in her bedroom and slammed the door. And I was frustrated. And I just sat right down on the kitchen floor. And it was like, I just took this vow of happiness, and now this is happening, right? This is happening, this fight kind of thing. And I asked, how do I be happy about this? And the realization that came to me is I had to be happy with being frustrated. I had to be happy with the experience of feeling frustrated. So I sat there with the experience of feeling frustrated. It's not like the frustration went away right away. But I sat there with the feeling of frustration and chose to be happy about that experience. And of course, once I chose to be happy with a little bit of time, not too much time, it kind of moved on. I was in acceptance of what was happening. And then it wasn't too much longer. Danielle came back and apologized, and Jasmine came in, and we talked it out, and we all went out to lunch together, and everything was back to normal. So it's funny, even when I took a vow of happiness, that didn't mean I was always going to experience the emotion that we call happiness. Because within probably 24 hours, I experienced the emotion of frustration. And that's not what we call happiness, right? We call that frustration. But being happy isn't about an emotion. Being happy is really about being open to whatever is. It's about not arguing with God. Being open to the current experience, whatever it is. So he tells this man, when this man says, well, then, I can marry and have children and run a business and just be happy. And Nisargadatta says, sure, or not be happy. Take it in stride. You see, That's the loving all method. That's the vow of happiness is it's about that total openness to whatever life brings. That total openness to whatever I feel. That total openness to whatever thought comes into the mind. It's really kind of the, not kind of, it's really the opposite of judgment. Right? Because we judge this feeling as a feeling I don't want to have, this thought as a thought I don't want to have, or this circumstance as a circumstance I don't want to have. That's the arguing with God, the judgment. So instead of judging, I just remain open to everything, the loving all method. So again, Nisargadatta says to this man, sure, you may or may not be happy, take it in your stride. And the man says, yet I want happiness. And Nisargadatta says, true happiness cannot be found in things that change and pass away. Pleasure and pain alternate inexorably. Happiness comes from the self and can be found in the self only. Find your real self, and all else will come with it. So, if I was attached to our vacation as a break from work, and in order to have this thought, I'd have to have the thought that my work is somehow, is in some way a burden, or in some way not what I want, right? So that thought would have to be there too, maybe unconsciously. But it would have to be there that somehow my work was not what I want. It was somehow a burden. It was in the way of my happiness. And so I'm really looking forward to this 5 days in this log cabin because I can finally get away from that work and relax and be happy. Well, even if the vacation didn't get canceled, I'm settling for 5 days of happiness in that thought process. I can go to the log cabin and sure. Assuming nothing goes wrong there, I can be happy for 5 days, but then I got to come back here. So, if that's the way my mind thinks, at best, I'm only going to get 5 days of happiness. That's really settling. And then I get a text from Ron that says, I may have an issue with vacation next week. Oh my God, what a crash. Now my opportunity for 5 days of happiness is being taken away from me. Whenever we look to something on the outside as the source of our happiness, at best it's temporary and it could be really out of reach, not even ever received. So he points to the true self, he points to within as the source of our happiness. And of course, the beauty about finding that is that we get to be happy all the time, no matter what. We get to be happy on vacation, sure. But we also get to be happy if something happens and vacation falls away. Because the happiness is here. It's like NTI said, some of y'all read this in NTI Matthew. It talked about following the twinkle in your own eye. Right? If you follow the twinkle in your own eye, it's with you no matter where you go. So you fall in love with the inner self. That's really falling in love with just being. Falling in love with ising, with presence, with here-ness, with now-ness, right? And those things, which are really all one thing, are always here. Whether I'm in a cabin in the woods or not, I am being. I am ising. I am existing. I am here. I'm here, whether it's here in a cabin or here in my office. I am here. I'm always here. And I am now. So if I'm in love with that essence, no one can take it away from me ever. And so I get to experience permanent happiness. So true happiness cannot be found in things that change and pass away. Pleasure and pain alternate inexorably. I don't know if I'm saying that word right. It's a pretty big word for Regina. Happiness comes from the self and can be found in the self only. Find your real self, and all else will come with it. Question: if my real self is peace and love, why is it so restless? Nisargadatta. It is not your real being that is restless. Its reflection in the mind appears restless because the mind is restless. It's just like the reflection of the moon in the water stirred by the wind. The wind of desire stirs the mind, and the me, which is but a reflection of the true self, appears changeful. But these ideas of movement, of restlessness, of pleasure and pain are all in the mind. The self stands beyond the mind, aware but unconcerned. So I'm just going to pause for a moment because I want to contemplate this. We all know the mind is restless. I'm sure we've all experienced a restless mind. He's referring, however, and I don't know if he's just using words or not, which is why I want to contemplate this. He's referring to the real self's reflection in the mind that appears restless because the mind is restless. So that's what I'm contemplating for a moment. The real self's reflection in the mind. What I am aware of in the mind are ideas of myself, and there's something else here besides ideas. There's attention. You know, attention can get completely absorbed in thought. And as you all know, it can get so absorbed in thought that, you know, we drive from point A to point B and then don't even remember that we drove it because we were lost in thought the whole time, right? So what I'm contemplating right now is this question. And if you guys have your own thoughts, feel free to write them on the board. I'm contemplating. Is the reflection of the true self in the mind, is that attention? Is attention restless? I'm attempting to remember a time of anxiousness, which for me is a little bit of a stretch. Because, you know, I have a calm presence now. from attempting to remember a time of anxiousness. And of course, I know the thoughts were jumping around, were restless. I'm looking to see if attention was restless too. And it seems to me that as far as I can remember, attention was like an, I want to call it an untrained horse. An untrained horse. So the thoughts just, it just followed the thoughts wherever the thoughts went. It was an untrained horse. I don't know why I'm using the word horse. It's just the image that came to me. So it's just going wherever the thoughts go. So I suppose if the thoughts are restless and attention is an untrained horse just following the thoughts, then it's restless too, right? And in fact, when we talk about meditation, you know, when some teachers talk about meditation, such as Adyashanti, for example, they will talk about resting attention in awareness. Doesn't resting attention in awareness sound like the opposite of the untrained attention, just chasing thoughts, right? One's wild and untrained. And the other is, you know, resting with the true self, attention on awareness, attention on presence. So let's look at this again now that I've contemplated that and see what we see in this paragraph. Again, the question was, if my real self is peace and love, why is it so restless? And he says, it is not your real being that is restless, but its reflection in the mind appears restless because the mind is restless. So I'm gonna stick out my neck here and say that the true self's reflection in the mind is attention. And attention appears restless because the mind's restless, and attention is an untrained horse just following those thoughts wherever they go. He says it's just like the reflection of the moon in the water stirred by the wind. The wind of desire stirs the mind and the me, which is but a reflection of the true self, and it appears changeful. But these ideas of movement, of restlessness, of pleasure and pain are all in the mind. The self stands beyond the mind, aware but unconcerned. I often call attention the arm of awareness, because awareness itself, or the I am presence itself, is open and unmoving. Like right this second, you're probably aware of more things than you're aware of, because if you're actually listening to me, your attention is focused on my voice, and therefore, since your attention is focused on my voice, there are other things in your environment that your awareness is aware of, but you're not paying attention to. For example, if you just kind of relax your attention for a moment, you could maybe hear someone in the other room in your house moving about, or you might hear the heater in your house, or you might hear traffic outside. You know, I can hear Jamie breathing. She's laying here sleeping. I can hear her breathing. I always have a ringing in my ears, although I don't always notice it. But when I relax attention, I woke Jamie up by saying her name. Sorry, Jamie. When I relax attention, I notice the ringing in my ears. And of course, that's just sounds. You also, maybe if you have your eyes on the Pal Talk screen, you're just seeing Pal Talk. Or if you're playing around in Facebook while I'm talking, you're seeing what's in Facebook. You're seeing what's ever on the screen. But if you just kind of relax a moment, you might notice that you can also see things with your peripheral vision. And that's always been here, right? But because your attention was focused on the computer screen, you weren't noticing that you were aware of things on your right and on your left and behind the computer screen, on the desk or wherever. So awareness is open and unmoving. It's attention that kind of moves around and dips into things. That's why I call it the arm of awareness. But if we really just take a moment to pause and focus on the unmoving part of awareness, which means not attention, so we're placing our attention on the unmoving part of awareness, we can see that it has nothing to do with thought. There can be thought or there cannot be thought. And this open general awareness is exactly the same as it always is. So this is what he is calling the real self right now. This background of awareness, this subtle open awareness that's always here that we actually tend not to notice because we're more focused on what attention is focused on. It's like attention is a narrow moving aspect of awareness, and we pay attention to attention and what attention is looking at, and we ignore the very broad, open awareness that's also always here. So Nisargadatta is directing the attention. Again, the questioner has asked, if my real self is peace and love, why is it so restless? Well, he's saying that the self is not restless. And if you can look at the mind, look at attention, you see that the mind has things moving all the time. Attention moves, but then look at general awareness, unmoving awareness. Notice how open and quiet it is. The mind may kick up some dust and attention may chase after it. But that's happening within this open general awareness that's at peace and never troubled by whatever the mind and its untrained horse attention get caught up in. So the open general awareness is the true self, and it's always at peace. Yeah, Ron says awareness is the sky, and my attention is watching the pattern, the color, the size of the clouds. Yeah, exactly. And so if we realize that the awareness is the true self, it's always, always, always at peace, is it not? It doesn't get agitated. Only mind and attention get agitated. Awareness does not. Now the questioner asks, how does one reach it? Which, we'll see what Nisargadatta says next, but that didn't used to be a funny question to me. I mean, I used to be just like everybody else. Well, how do you get there? But how could you not be there? How could you get away from it? I did this at a conference once in Las Vegas. I was teaching about awareness, and I said, everybody just get up, run around, see if you can run away from awareness. Ron, you were there. I don't know if you were there when I did that, but that's where I saw you, was at that particular conference. I saw you at lunch. I said, run around, see if you can run away from it. You can't run away from awareness. How do you get there is a silly question, because you can't get away from it, because it's what you are. No matter where you go, there it is. There's no getting there. It's what you are. You're already there. It's about not being distracted away from it by mind and attention and world. You don't arrive at it or achieve it. You realize what's always already present. But you can't run away from awareness. If you don't believe me, then, tomorrow morning get up and put on your jogging clothes and see if you can. You can't lose it. It's always present. It's already here. But the questioner doesn't realize that, so he's asking, how does one reach it? And Nisargadatta says, oh, he says what I just said in slightly different words, but he says, you are the self here and now. Leave the mind alone. Stand aware and unconcerned, and you will realize that to stand alert but detached, watching events come and go, is an aspect of your real nature. Again, this isn't true of attention, and this isn't true of thought. This is true of open awareness, our real nature. So our real nature is open and at peace. Whether my mind is agitated and attention's chasing after that agitation, or whether my mind is at peace, I'm kicked back in a log cabin by a fire reading a good book. Right? The mind and attention can be at peace when I'm kicked back in that log cabin reading a good book, or it can be agitated when I'm at my imaginary job that I don't like, and there's too much to do and I can't get it all done. But the open awareness is the same. And that's what needs to be noticed. Right? That's what needs to be noticed. And this is the advantage of the loving all method, or just living naturally, as Nisargadatta says, letting things come as they come. Because if you learn to just be in acceptance of whatever is, let everything come as it comes, when that means that the mind and attention are relaxed, right? And when the mind and attention are relaxed, you are more likely to notice open awareness. When a mind and attention are agitated, you are more likely not to notice open awareness. So by choosing a life of acceptance, you're more likely to notice yourself as the witnessing principle, because that's what awareness is. It's the witnessing principle. It witnesses everything. I can hear a dog barking in a neighbor's house, right? That's noticing that dog barking in a neighbor's house is witnessing. And the time that I've been teaching, in addition to noticing the words on the page and the dialogue that's coming through my mouth, as a result of the words on the page, I noticed a text come in from my boyfriend. I noticed a phone and a voice message from my dad. I noticed my dog snoring. I noticed another dog barking. I noticed the little blinking cursor down in the little text box at the bottom of Pal Talk. I've noticed, Ron and George and Zita and Andy and Carrie and Meg, and Dove, right? I've noticed that. Lots of noticing has been going on. Because awareness is just naturally being aware. Yeah, Ron says, are you defining attention as what the mind is focused on? I'm defining attention as what I call I call it, like I said, I call it the arm of awareness. It's the ability to direct, I guess, the mind. I mean, if I don't want to use the word attention again, like for example, if I tell you right now, pay attention to your feet, right? Your attention can go to the feet and you can be aware of the feet. And then I can say, pay attention to your heart. And your attention goes to your heart. So that's what I'm referring to as the attention. But that's happening within the open general awareness, which is unmoving. So yeah, maybe it's the will to direct the mind would be another way to word it. In fact, attention and mind can be seen as synonymous. Uh-oh. Oh, good. It's 2 minutes till. Jamie's right. Jamie gets there's a the night when Jamie's like, okay, you've worked enough, stop it. And she's just coming over with that look, but she's right, it's 2 till 8. See, 8 is when I quit. 8 is when I quit work every night. And she's right, it's 2 till 8. In fact, I'm no longer in the Michael Langford study group, but the Michael Langford study group on Monday night goes from 7:30 till 8:30 my time. And in the last half hour, it was always a struggle with Jamie because as far as Jamie's concerned, I was supposed to quit at 8 and the Michael Langford study group went till 8:30. So, she would sometimes just bark and, cause all kinds of distraction because she wanted me to quit work. But she's right. She's only 2 minutes early tonight. It's about time for me to wrap this up. Danielle says that Jamie is a clock. She always knows what time it is. So, the question was, how do you reach the self? The answer is, you are the self here and now. Leave the mind alone, stand aware and unconcerned, and you will realize that to stand alert but detached, watching events come and go, is an aspect of your real nature. Now it's interesting because he does say this is an aspect of your real nature. I would have said this is your real nature. I know, Jamie, we all know. We know 1 more minute, right? She's getting impatient. But it's interesting. He says it's an aspect of your real nature. I would have said it is your real nature. And the next question is, what are the other aspects? And that's the cliffhanger I'm going to leave us with. So, in order to find out what the other aspects are of our real nature, you'll have to join me here 2 weeks from tonight, and we'll continue this message then, okay? So, I'm going to let go of the mic, contemplate a title, and I'll type it in for you in just a moment. Bye, everyone.